The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Good morning, everybody. We're back. Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show. You know, I forgot to tell you, I went fishing the other day. Yeah, I met my buddy Dale from Easton, and we went to the upper eastern shore, the upper reaches of the Chop Tank, and did some fishing for hickory shad. They're starting to come in. I think we caught about 10. It was awful cold, and we wrapped it up early. So, but they're there. Caught my first hickory of the year. So did Dale, and it's all good. Let's talk to our guest this morning, Harry Hornick. Good morning, Harry. How are you?
Good morning, Al. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Welcome back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Ladies and gentlemen, Harry is the striped bass program manager for the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And striped bass is in the news.
Yep. Thanks for having me here.
My pleasure.
As we speak, there's some of the striped bass biologists have been out on the spawning ground since the beginning of the week, Upper Bay and the Potomac.
Okay.
And they're getting reports, you know, of large fish up to 43, 44 inches on the spawning grounds, both in the Potomac and the Upper Bay. And they've seen some of the hickory shad and American shad that you were talking about.
Oh, good, good. So, glad to hear that.
Yep, all in pre-spawn. None of them have spawned yet, so...
Yeah, I saw that the on the fishing report that the shad surveys, electrofishing, Chuck Stentz and the group have been up there fishing for the shad, the hickories, and the American shad. So
yeah, yep. I know the other folks have seen some herring up there too. So
yep,
a lot of different species up there, a lot of white perch up there already.
Good, glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. I talked to last Saturday. I was in Cambridge and I stopped by the local seafood processor there, Cool Ice. And longtime waterman, Mr. Richard Manning from over in the Chestertown area, was delivering some white perch. And he said it has been a phenomenal year for white perch on the Chester. I think he said, you know, the nets are bringing in, their guys are bringing in like a ton a day of white perch.
Cool. Good.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got them.
That's good news.
Yep.
Neat.
Indeed. So, but we're here to talk about striped bass. The season is opening a week.
April 16th.
Yeah, a week from today. How about that? Everybody's getting geared up and ready and rocking and rolling. And so, you know, I guess the question is, you know, here we are. This is a fishery that opens in conjunction with the spawning season of the Chesapeake Bay striped bass. You know, with other species, we tend to protect the spawners, like we close the walleye season, in the spawning season. We close largemouth and smallmouth bass season, but we open it wide open for people to catch those spawning striped bass. And I guess the question is, when's the peak of the spawn? Is that now, or ready to get into it, or is it after the season opens, or do we know exactly what prompts that?
Well, temperature and daylight, but mostly temperature. And right now, it's on the Upper Bay. As of yesterday, it was just under 49 degrees, the water temperature.
Right.
And their peak spawn is between 57 and 66 degrees. The striped bass up there,
yeah.
they really don't want to spawn right now, even though, you know, people may be thinking, you know, they're concerned. I mean, but, you know, for the most part, they're going to wait till the water temperature, you know, starts getting into, you know, 52, 53. They'll spawn anywhere between 52 and 75 degrees.
Right.
You know, in the course of, you know, of our record keeping and other people up down the coast. But the peak spawn in Maryland is between like 57 and 66 degrees.
Okay.
You really won't, you may see some at underneath that temperature, but the fish pretty much, you know, they pretty much figured it out. They know when, you know, when to spawn. And
sure.
As I said, you know, the biologists that are up there, Beth Versack and crew and Eric Durrell.
Oh, yeah, I know Beth, sure.
Those folks, you know, they're seeing a number of fish. You know, they're seeing low water temperatures, but nobody is, you know, everybody is pre-spawn. All the herring, the shad, hickory shad,
yeah,
striped bass, you know, none of them are even ready to spawn. So that's a good thing. I mean,
well,
because we've seen in the past that we've had, you know, what's dangerous and it's totally out of our control is when you have, you know, you've had warming, you've had the, you know, the beginning of April is starting to, you know, the water temperature is getting into 55, 56.
Yeah.
Then you have a spawn, and then you have it may drop to 54, and that's when, you know, nature takes over, and it's you have high egg and larval mortality, and then that affects the whole year class.
Well, sure.
So,
I mean, we took the temperature in the chop tank the other day, and it was, like I said, it was like 28 degrees air temperature. Water temperature was only 46.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we were surprised we even caught any of the shad up there, you know, that they were even active. But it was a good first hour, let's put it that way, and after that it was done. But, you know, not only is it water temperature that affects the spawn, but it's also, I guess, the photo period has a lot to do with that as well.
Right, daylight length, and just, I mean, there's some other cues that I'm sure that fish follow, but, you know, really the bigger one, the two are temperature and daylight, and temperature's probably the biggest one. They just really, you know, as you said, you saw some fish, you know, they can be pretty active in fairly low water temperatures.
Oh, sure.
You know, they're very active, but yet, you know, they know when to spawn. I mean, they've gone through this for, you know, thousands of years.
Sure, sure, sure. All the females were still, you know, pre-spawn, so
yeah.
So it was good.
But, you know, and you mentioned, you know, that, you know, here we are, we're fishing, you know, during the spawning season, and, you know, Maryland is taking, you know, we're trying to do this, you know, I don't want to use the buzzwords, but adaptive management. You know, we're trying to balance conservation with the resource, especially like the spawning stock or the spawning component that's only here for really a short period of time in Maryland waters.
Sure, and that's those big giant fish, and that's what people want to fish for. That's what, you know, that's what the desire is, to catch a big fish.
Yes, yes, and, you know, the population is healthy enough to sustain some harvest.
Sure.
We still have closed areas. We still have, you know, we're not fishing in March 15th. I mean, you know, catch and keep, or, you know,
right,
catch and release. But, you know, there are some constraints there. You know, it isn't, you know,
sure,
some people might, you know, when they hear, oh, they're fishing on spawning stock, they're, oh my gosh, that's terrible. How can you allow that? And, you know, we're allowing it to some degree, and we're also allowing it so that people have the opportunity.
Well,
fishermen can catch those big fish.
And again, I'll say this publicly, and I think I've said it to you in the past, and I'll say it to anybody in fisheries service, I'm not a fan of that early catch and release season on the flats. I'm just not, because listening to Rudy the other night on his catch and release presentation at MSSA on Kent Island, we went, and, you know, listening to him, they could not really tell us what damage was done by handling those fish, you know, even though the water temperatures are cold. But, you know, he said there's a couple things, you know, the hook wound and then the handling of the fish. They couldn't tell us how catching those big cow rockfish and handling them prior to them spawning affected the spawn, whether they dropped their eggs, whether they, you know, they, there was egg mortality or anything else. Even if the fish survived, what happened to the eggs after those fish were caught and stressed and brought in and lifted into the boat and big picture taken and dropped back overboard, you know? And so, I mean, but on the face of it, I've always been opposed to that season. But I qualify that by saying this, that during the trophy season, the rivers are closed. The spawning reaches are closed. And, you know, that will assure the sustainability of striped bass, you know, forevermore, as long as those spawning rivers stay closed.
Right. And that's one of the controls that I'm talking about. It isn't wide open. You know, there's closed areas. The natural resource police are out there. They're patrolling. You know, they're trying to do the best that they can. And also, you know, Rudy is definitely one of the experts, on catch and release. And I mean, it was sad when he left the department, but I mean, it's neat to hear he's still involved.
Oh yeah,
and I mean, he's right. I mean, there is going to be some mortality. I mean, we know in the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, when they look at all this information, you know, they're looking at, you know, they're taking into consideration, you know, some handling mortality, some, you know, some And it's like 8 to 9%.
There's always a formula, isn't there?
Or you can make a formula.
Seriously. I mean, there always is, and you've got to factor all these things in.
Right. I mean, this isn't just a dartboard or a shot in the dark.
No.
I mean, there's people that Alexis Sheriff with Maryland. I mean, he's one of the best on the East Coast, and he just he pulls his hair out trying to get the right analysis, to get the best numbers, the most accurate numbers.
Sure.
One thing I mentioned, we talk about handling the large cows, how that affects their eggs. We have the spawning stock survey that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Biologists, we handle fish on the spawning grounds during the spawning season. We're catching them in experimental nets. We're handling them. We're measuring them.
Sure.
We're taking scale samples, and we're putting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife tags in them.
Right.
Again, during some of them, we monitor like the ones that are pre-spawn, ones that are just getting ready to spawn, and we keep track of all this information. So we have all this handling going on by the biologist, and we have returns from those tags.
Right.
Anywhere from a year, 5 years, 10 years,
okay,
15 years, up and down the East Coast. So we know that they can certainly sustain some kind of handling because, we're handling them. We're trying to be careful. We get them back overboard, but, we're basically doing, making an incision, putting in a tag, and releasing a fish, which, certainly probably is a stress.
Sure.
And yet the fish is showing up the next year.
It's not necessarily a question of the mortality of the fish. It's the viability of the eggs.
Well, I my personal belief is that, we see these fish spawning.
Of course.
Repeat spawners.
Sure, sure.
It certainly may have some effect. I mean, everything has an effect to some
degree. Of course
it does.
It's
just a matter of...
Yeah, but you guys aren't hooking them in the mouth and dragging them in the boat and, hauling them up over the side and lifting them up, holding them by their bellies and keeping them out of the water, you guys know how to handle fish.
And there I would preach, we certainly, people like Keith Lockwood and Joe Evans, they're trying to teach, the whole, a proper handling,
of course,
to minimize that. And
yep,
that's where that can make a difference.
Sure.
Certainly the anglers
sure
can certainly help.
I mean, John Mollican does it with those big muskies up on the, Potomac and, they get the bag nets out and they handle them and they take the picture and back in the water they go. But I'm not sure that we get the same respect to the striped bass that we get to to those fish. I don't know. This isn't a debate. This is information. I'm just tossing it out there.
So. I hope people do, use the proper fishing ethics and just, do the best they can.
And I think that is one of the reasons if you're going to do that, you go with a qualified guide that knows what he's doing and has been doing it a long, long time.
Yeah. So. Oh, absolutely. So. Now, you mentioned, having a fishery on a spawning stock and,
yeah,
last year we had, I think it was, 30,000 fish were harvested. We, we had to cut back a little bit, from previous years. But, 30,500 fish sounds like a lot. But when you look at it on a coastal basis, which is what, all the management structure is kind of oriented toward, the analysis they're done, on a coastal basis, that's like 1 to 2, maybe 3% of the total fish caught on a coastal basis. So, again, this short season in Maryland, it gives people a chance to catch something that they'd have to drive to Massachusetts.
Oh, sure.
The New England states in the summertime to get an opportunity.
No doubt.
That we have in our backyard for a short period of time.
Right. Well, I we can talk about it all day long. I mean, the Virginia, the North Carolina trophy season in the wintertime, to me is more detrimental than the Chesapeake Bay trophy season.
I think they're trying to get a handle on that down there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Virginia people are certainly aware of it. I mean, I know they're
sure.
they're trying to do the best they can, but it's a different situation.
Exactly.
Different situation than what Maryland has.
Okay. Harry, listen, we're going to take a little break here. When we come back, I want to know what changes were made to the 2016 season from the 2015 season, and we'll go from there. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
All right. Hey, look, our folks at our friends at Clyde Sports Shop are having a Browning sale. And it's called the Second Amendment sale, Second Amendment sales tax event, basically. If you purchase a new Browning firearm, you can save up to 8% between now and April 30th. Excuse me. So you go to Clyde Sports Shop, you take a look at all the fine firearms down there, like the A5 or the 725 Sporting Clays or the Maxis or the BPS. The good news is when you buy a new Browning firearm at Clyde Sports Shop, retail price between April 1st and April 30th, you can receive a rebate of up to 8% of the purchase price to reimburse you for your state sales tax. In Maryland, that's, of course, 6%. So it's like having your own little Boston Tea Party. So why not head into Clyde Sports Shop, take advantage of the savings on Browning firearms and get that 8% rebate and, celebrate the Second Amendment. And, by the way, you can celebrate the fact that some of the gun bills failed in Maryland this year, and we're very happy with that. So why not stop by? Clyde's is your full-line Browning dealer, located at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. Alan Ellis here for Catonsville Line-X and Bay Line-X of Glen Burnie spray-on bedliners. You know, Line-X spray-on bedliners are rated number one and carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Line-X spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools and your tackle, crabbing, and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose a Line-X premium bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection or the Line-X Extra with Kevlar and paint match. And Catonsville Line-X and Bay Line-X now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your trucks. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Line-X bedliner and truck gear accessories. Catonsville Line-X, located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Line-X of Glen Burnie, located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. 100 decoy carvers, wildlife artists, photographers, and others will be on hand at the 35th Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Haverty Grace Decoy Museum. All their work will be on display, and most of it will be for sale. There will be carving competitions, a retriever demonstration, a goose and duck calling competition, a live raptor display, a sculling competition, a silent auction, and much more, featuring community and nonprofit organizations. That's Friday evening, May 6th, Saturday, May 7th, and Sunday, May 8th. Admission is just $10 for the weekend, and kids under 12 are admitted free with a paying adult. It's a family-friendly festival with great food, lots to see and do. You go up, you park, and then get on a free shuttle bus that runs between the museum, the middle school, and the activity center. You can learn about great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake Bay, the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Haverty Grace Decoy Museum on May 6th, 7th, and 8th. For more information, visit decoymuseum.com or call the museum at 410-939-3739. Good folks, wonderful place to visit. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Stay connected. Listen on AM 680 or stream us on your PC, tablet, or phone at WCBM.com.
New frequency detected.
day by day. I dig snow and rain and the bright sunshine.
Little Tommy James, Dragging the Line for you trollers out there next Saturday. Hey, Harry, hang on there a minute. Let's lock Harry in. Okay. Here. Yeah, hang in there a minute. I want to talk to Gene in La Plata on the turkey report. Hey, Gene, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Good, buddy. We got a guest on the line, so give us a little brief report on the turkeys, please.
All right. Well, it's a little bit of cold rain, but they're talking their heads off, and it sounds like the flocks are splitting up.
That's a good thing.
Next Saturday ought to be pretty good for the youth hunt.
Yep, sounds like it.
Just a real quick reminder, this afternoon, kids been sitting around playing with their turkey calls. There's a turkey calling contest over at Bass Pro Shop this afternoon for the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I want to tell you guys, I didn't hear you too much this morning. My radio hasn't picked up, but what a great job you guys did a couple weeks ago for the coalition.
On what, Gene?
From the banquet.
We did. Yeah, we did. We did do a wonderful job. And I don't know, did you get the press release on the Poaching Restitution Act?
No, I didn't.
Oh, I have to put you on the list and send you one. The Poaching Restitution Act is law. As soon as the governor signs it, buddy, we passed it.
Excellent.
Yep.
Excellent job.
Yep. $2,000 to $5,000 fine for sick of deer and bucks under 150 inches. $5,000 to $10,000 mandatory fine over 150 inches plus community
service.
Job. Yep.
Excellent.
Yep.
Been working hard for that one.
It was a hard lift, no question about it, Gene. So, all right, buddy, I'll send you a press release.
All right, thank you much.
See you, buddy. Thanks. Turkeys are talking their head off. Now we got back to Harry. Good morning, Harry. How are you?
Hey,
again.
Congratulations on the poaching.
Thank you. Thank you. I stopped to see Karen yesterday down at Taws, and walking back to the truck across the parking lot, somebody started yelling at me, Alan, turn around. There's a wildlife director. he's come over and congratulations, stuck his hand out. I thought that was very nice. So, yeah, so anyway, very nice. So, the season opens next week. What am I supposed to be aware of as far as any changes to the regulations this year?
Well, it's very different from, well, the main difference from last year is that there's no longer a slot limit. It's one fish per person per day at greater than or equal to 35 inches.
Right.
Before we had that, we had the 28 to 36, then we had the no-take slot.
Yep.
And, it served its purpose. I mean, after the past couple of years, ASMSC has been, advocating the, harvest reductions on a coastal basis.
Right.
They said, all right, each state has to cut 25% on their coastal harvest.
Right.
And, we had options. We put options on the table. Again, people like in the department, Angela Giuliano, Jeffrey Horn,
yep.
Alexis Sheriff, they sat down, calculated numbers and said, okay, here's your options in order to, estimate those reductions.
Right.
And, this 35 inches was actually one of one of a few options that they could have had people could have had last year. People decided they wanted something else, and now we're back to a set, trophy,
yep.
trophy size fish, basically.
So, Harry, is it possible to please everybody?
I don't
when it comes to striped bass trophy season.
No comment. we do try to please people. I mean, when we have, when we have a major change like this, I mean, there's numerous public meetings. We go through, the advisory commissions. We go through the, the MSSA, the CCA.
Oh, involved. Sure. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people
no question.
Get emails and notices, and there's always somebody that says, I never heard anything about that.
Yeah, no, I never heard anything about it.
Oh,
no, have no clue. Yep.
The other things, no eels, the main, the restrictions from the different areas is still in effect,
sure.
like last year. But, the major change is the one fish per person per day at 35 inches.
And look, somebody can go out there and catch a big fish, and if they don't want to keep it to eat, which those big giant fish aren't necessarily the best to eat. I mean, you can eat them, but you really got to, season them up a little bit. But if you want to catch a big fish, and you catch fish over 40 inches, I believe the governor will still sign a citation for you, will he not?
I think they've advocated, taking a picture, showing you measuring it. And,
right.
Yes, yeah, and making it, like some other areas, basically, catch and release. And
yep.
We do know, and that certainly is a, I don't want to say this, it's a personal decision on the angler. You mentioned you're not, you're not for certain things. You don't like certain things, and
well,
I mean,
I want to err on the side of the fish. I want to err on the side of conservation and sustainability. That's my deal. Would I go out there during a trophy season if invited and catch one of those big fish? Yes, I would. But if I caught a fish over 40 inches, I'd take a picture and drop it back overboard.
Those fish are definitely rare. They're definitely, people have called me and said, oh, I heard those fish can't spawn anymore. The eggs aren't any good. And it's like, those are the pros at spawning.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I remember back in the days of Ben, at the hatchery.
Yep.
Ben Florence, yes, Ben Florence. There was a captive fish in one of the hatcheries that died. And I don't know why, but I believe it was 96 pounds.
If it's one I'm thinking of, it was 92.6 pounds.
Okay, 92.
It's a big fish.
Yeah, huge fish.
It's a big fish, and I think it was just a matter of those fish were, they were sampled on the spawning grounds like biologists.
Right.
Taken back to the hatcheries. They had stress, on them.
Well, of course.
So, and that's what, unfortunately, Ben certainly, they didn't really want to sacrifice that fish and
right.
It died anyway. But it certainly, it gives people, when you see that replica of the, the mold of the fish on the wall, it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
It's like some of those, I think, are still out there.
Of course they are.
Those are
still out there. Yep, sure they are. They're not necessarily going to be the ones that bite actively, but they're there somewhere.
And they hold millions of eggs. They hold millions of eggs.
Exactly.
The eggs are larger. The eggs are more durable than younger fish. So they certainly, there's an advantage to having the big, we call the big cows.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So very good. So 35 inches, one fish over 35 inches. You catch one over 40 and release it.
Well, no, you can keep.
You can keep it.
You can keep anything over 35, you can keep.
Of course.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm saying I'm bringing back the governor's citation thing. If you want some recognition for your catch, a signed proclamation by the governor that you were you did the right thing and released that big cow back to and it could be a male, who knows.
Yeah.
But you released that fish back into the bay. That's kind of a motivation for me. I would do that.
That's a good thing.
And
that certainly does help the population. The structure now, how with this 35 inch minimum size,
yeah,
we're thinking, oh, there's there won't be any fish out there, there's fewer. And In most, in most seasons there are, but like at this point in time, we've got 5 year classes of fish, starting with like the 2003 year class, which was like a very strong year class.
Right.
That there's basically 9 to 13 year old fish that are like right in that slot limit, or not in that slot.
Right over that 35.
Right over that 35 inches. So, I personally think there will be a lot of fish out there. I mean, the other biologists that have looked at this said, wow, there's. People should have a good season. People should be able to, you may not get that 40-inch fish or that 43-inch fish, but there's certainly a lot of 35-inch fish and 36-inch fish out there that, that the charter captains and the sportsmen can, get an opportunity to get.
Hey, I've got an old gray retired fisheries biologist wants to say hi.
Okay.
Good morning, Dale.
Alan, good morning.
How are you?
Harry, how you doing?
Hey, Dale, how you doing?
Oh, fat and gray, getting around.
That's good. Good to hear from you.
Harry, I can well remember some of those public hearings, and people don't realize the last thing the department wants to give up is the opportunity to fish. And you all present all these various options, but at least back in my day, we just tried to keep it to have as many days as possible. And, people complain about a slot limit and things like that, but they don't realize that, we're trying to maximize opportunity.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's a key thing. And people, they need to go if they don't understand that this thing is not in a vacuum, they need to attend some of the ASMSC meetings on striped bass. It's to say they're contentious is an understatement.
Yep. Yep.
And this doesn't happen in a vacuum, and we're very, very fortunate that we've had such good representation in the past that we're able to fish the way we are on these fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just people, I know they complain and that they don't like this and they don't like that, but that, like with the slot limit last year, if you didn't have a slot limit, you probably would have had to cut back on the season length.
Yes, yeah. And that was, and as you said, that was another factor the department, tries to keep in mind, because the fishing groups don't want that either. They don't want to cut back on days if at all possible.
The opportunity.
Yeah, we're definitely, it's a compromise or balancing act, and you as well, or more than anybody, like, you know, the, like I said, just the different, you know, different ways you can look at this. And then, and you and I both can look back and say that, you know, in the early 90s, and like, how many days were those seasons? You know, 15 days?
Yeah.
When it first started.
Days.
Yep. And 36 inches.
Yeah.
If I remember. Yeah.
Yep.
Harry, during the trophy season, the question I have is, when do you start seeing the post-spawn fish? I know early on, I'm sure it's the majority of fish that you sample are pre-spawn. In terms of when you do the creel, when do you start seeing a bigger majority of the post-spawn fish?
Well, certainly towards like the beginning of May. Now overall, we had, I think it was 81% last year were post-spawn.
Okay, that's good.
But that's over the whole course,
right?
The course of the whole, you know, the whole trophy season,
right?
But you certainly start see. I mean, you certainly see the ones that are pre-spawn in, you know, like within the first 2 weeks of the season.
If I remember correctly, the weather was not conducive to fishing in very good conditions last year at the beginning of the season.
Yes, and that's what put people off. People weren't out there harvesting again those few fish that were pre-spawn, and you know that actually helped. I mean, that actually
yeah.
helped cut down the number, because in 2014 it was 92% of the fish, you know, I'm sorry, that's another number, but it taken over the course of the season, you know, we definitely see more fish that are pre-spawned the first 2 weeks, and then it starts to drop off after that. And then by the end, you know, by closer towards the end, you know, when you get towards the end of the season, they're all post-spawn. They're all post-spawn.
Sure.
Yeah. Alan, if this weather pattern continues the way it has been,
it's going to be the same this year as it was last year.
People.
Yeah,
right.
No.
It'll both delay the spawn, and it'll delay people even getting out there to
right.
catch those.
That's
yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Right.
Harry, my best to you, and I'll give my best to the crew.
I will do. Thank you for calling.
All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Dale.
Mm-hmm.
There goes Dale. And we still have Harry. That's a good thing.
A lot of knowledge there.
Tremendous amount of knowledge. Yeah, we fished together on Wednesday. And there's a man that knows more about shad than anybody probably on the face of the earth, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So we talked about last year, and we're basing some of our, you know, interview here or report today on last year. You know, let's talk about the 2015 juvenile study. Let's talk about the, you mentioned that 81% of the fish caught in 2015 were post-spawn. What was the average size last year, and what year class were they fishing on last year?
Well, we were fishing on last year. We were fishing on the, you know, I said, you know, there's that basically 9 through 13-year-old fish.
Right.
Was kind of in the middle of it last year. A lot of them were in the slot limit.
Right.
And now that there isn't a slot limit, those same fish that a lot of people were throwing back were, you know, are now basically catchable.
Right.
And I was actually, you know, I just want to make sure that people understand that, you know, again, it's a very different season from last year.
Okay.
You know, the you know, with this, again, the slot limit, the slot limit did what it was designed to do, which was to cut back, you know, reduce some of our harvest.
Right.
You know, and it's funny, like at the beginning of the season, there was a lot of complaints, a lot of concerns. People weren't, you know, people were having to have a lot of throwbacks. And then it's kind of funny because the last, you know, 2 weeks of the season, people started catching fish that they could keep. So, you know, in that 28 to 36, and then some of the 40-inch fish were, you know, becoming rare. But, you know, it kind of evened out. I mean, people had a little better success in charter boat guys. You know, they would have liked a better season. But I just, you know, I think you're just going to see a different situation this year with, you know, with the new minimum, you know, the 35-inch minimum.
Yeah, remind me again what it was last year. It was
28 to 36.
28 to 36.
And then anything greater than 40 inches. So you had that, you know, 36 to 39.9-inch fish that you had to throw back. And we went through the same thing in, was it 2007?
Yeah, there was another slot limit season in there a while back, yeah.
People complained.
Yeah, well, they're going to, yeah. So anything between 36 and 40 has to go back. And there were, again, like you said, a lot of throwbacks. So now it's just 35 inches and over, and you're good to go.
Yes, and you've got, you know, if you you mentioned the juvenile survey.
Yeah.
You know, you have 4 of the 5 years of, like, this bulk of the fish that are going to be caught were from good year classes. So,
good.
That, you know, the 2003 year class, everybody hears about that. It was a very, you know, it was a very strong year class. And the other year classes that, you know, that this Fisher will be targeting were, you know, again, four out of five of those year classes were like above average.
Good.
Were pretty good. So there's, you know, a lot of opportunity out there.
How was 15?
It was way above average. It was like one of the eighth. I mean, eighth place doesn't sound great when you figure it's eight out of 62. So in the 62 years of the survey, last year's juvenile survey number was like 24.2, which, you know, it's just a number, but it was eighth highest in like the 62 year history. It was a very strong year class. You know, 93% of the samples that were taken had striped bass in them, which, you know, that's another kind of a measure of abundance. Well, not necessarily a measure of abundance, but just measure of presence.
So we've got a sustainable fishery now for the next 9 or 10 years, based on 1 year class.
Well, yes. I mean, that 1 year class, you know, again, like the 2003 year class, it's been dominant factor in many different fisheries in the bay. You know, the trophy season, the other recreational seasons. It's, you know, those fish have you know, supplied a lot of individual fish to fishermen, you know, a lot of opportunities, you know, for a long time.
Okay.
So
beautiful.
I mean, you know, again, the downside is this, you know, is weather. You know, you can have a large spawning stock. You can have a large year class, like, you know, these 2003 that are out there spawning. But you know, if we have, water temperature drops, you know, we have that shock to the system and, you know, boom.
Mother Nature can always drop the hammer.
Right.
You never know. If you can't get to the fish, you can't catch them.
Right, so. Right. And then, you know, again, the population itself, you know, they try to adjust for it. They try to, you know, they're doing their best to sustain themselves. So.
Well, sure. Exactly.
But, you know, some other good things, you know, as I mentioned, you know, juvenile American shad, river herring, and white perch were very, very good numbers last year in 2015. So,
gotcha.
You know, again, Mr. Manning there, you know, he's going to be seeing the benefits of that with, you know, with the white perch and just, you know, the bay itself with American, you know, with hickory shad, American shad, you know, with lots of those coming up through, that'll be, you know, that's good for the system.
What a nice guy, by the way, Mr. Manning.
Neat.
Yep. So. Yep. All right, Harry, hang on there. We're going to take another short commercial break here, and we'll get right back to you.
Okey-doke.
All right. Okay. For great fishing tackle and crabbing supplies and ready to go on rockfish, crabbing and fishing information, that would be Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, and by the way, Bud has a great trolling chart. If you go in and you say, I heard about the trolling chart on the radio, can I have one? Gives you the depth and the amount of line you need to have out, the weight and that type of thing on how to troll for striped bass. So to get there, take Route 100 all the way to the end, hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island, go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. If you need anything for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay, it's Fishbones Bait and Tackle. They also carry the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. That's Fishbones Bait and Tackle, 410-360-0573. Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena, 410-360-0573. Hey, Alan Ellis here for Bay Linex at Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. You know, Linex Spray-On Bedliners are rated number one, and they carry a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. Your tools, your tackle, your crabbing and hunting gear can't hurt your truck bed. Choose the Linex Premium Bedliner that looks great and offers UV protection, or the Linex Extra with Kevlar and paint match. You know what? Bay Linex and Catonsville Linex now offer truck gear, the toughest accessories for your truck. Step bars, tonneau covers, floor liners, grill guards, fender flares, and much more. These guys provide the best protection for your truck. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, the Linex Bedliner, and truck gear accessories. Bay Linex at Glen Burnie is located at 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. Of course, call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Catonsville Linex, located 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. 410-455-0800. Hey, Clyde Sports Shop has a great deal on Browning firearms. If you purchase a new Browning firearm between now and April 30th, Browning will rebate you 8%. They're calling it the Second Amendment sales tax event. In other words, they want to save you your tax on your shotgun. Look, $1,000 shotgun, you're talking $60. So that's not a bad deal, not a bad deal at all. 8% of $1,000 is $80. So it's all meant to save you money from Clyde's Sports Shop and the fine folks at Browning. Clyde's is located at your full-line Browning dealer at 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. They've got all the Browning shotguns. They've got the A5. They've got the Maxis. They've got the gold 10-gauge. They've got the BPS pump. They've got the Satori 725 Sporting Clays gun. They've got them all. All you got to do is go in and purchase one, and you will own one of the finest firearms on the planet, and you get an 8% rebate. Clyde Sport Shop, your full-line Browning dealer, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit number 9. That phone number, 410-242-6108. If you're a fisherman, they've got everything you need, including the 24-hour fishing hotline, 247-3474, 247-FISH. Go get a Browning at Clyde Sport Shop. Get an 8% rebate.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, we're back. Look, if you enjoy collecting decoys or even just looking at the artwork and even great wildlife art like paintings and sculptures and things like that, waterfowl hunting, if you like a scenic walk along the bay, it's time for the 35th Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Harvard E. Grace Decoy Museum. This year's event is Friday evening, May 6th, Saturday, May 7th, and Sunday, May 8th. Admission is just $10 for the weekend. Children under 12 are admitted free with a paying adult. Carving competitions, a retriever demonstration, a goose and duck calling competition, a live raptor display, a sculling competition, a silent auction, and much more featuring all the community and nonprofit organizations. There's 100 decoy carvers and wildlife artists, photographers, and others on hand to showcase their work. Much of it, of course, is on sale. It's a family-friendly event, and there is great food. Lots to see and do. Free shuttle buses run between the museum, the middle school, and the activity center where all the action is. Learn about the great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake at the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Harvard E. Grace Decoy Museum, May 6th, 7th, and 8th. For more information, decoymuseum.com or call them at 410-939-3739. We'll see you at the Decoy Festival.
Hear this week's top newsmakers and a panel of expert political analysis on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, Sundays at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
But I'll take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones. They're mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade sitting.
All right, we are back with Harry Hornick, who is our striped bass program manager from Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And we were talking about the trophy season, the year classes, and that type of thing. How are we doing on striped bass, Harry?
On a coastal basis, the state of Maryland, the Maryland Chesapeake Bay, is in actually pretty good shape, I believe. I know a lot, you know, you read a lot of different things in the press that, you know, the population's, you know, not where it should be. I mean, the population, you know, there was a moratorium, you know, for some people, us old-timers. I hate using that term, but
yep.
Us old-timers.
Yeah, well, we are, so it's all right.
Can remember the moratorium.
Yep.
And 85 to 90, and you know, it was closed. The fishery was given a chance, you know, closed on a coastal basis. Fishery was given a chance to recuperate
yep.
from harvest. And then in 96, it was basically, you know, decreed that it was recovered.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, basically, you know, all recreational commercial fishing, you know, on the East Coast was kind of, you know, became more liberal, and, you know, and it's been a learning process, but, you know, the people up and down the coast have, you know, they're getting better all the time at it. And,
sure.
You know, again, the monitoring, the growth of the stock on, again, on a coastal basis, it's way better than it was in 96 when it was deemed and recovered.
Well, you know, there's no crabs because the striped bass have come back. There's no bluefish because the striped bass have come back. There's no menhaden because the striped bass have come back.
Yeah.
You know, blame it all on the rockfish.
We need to catch more.
Catch more, kill them all.
Kill them all.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's, you know, rockfish certainly eat all of those things, but they're certainly not. I mean, those are all different issues, different shows, different hours,
different people on the hot seat.
They could spend an hour on each one of those topics with you, you know, in the department or in other states.
Oh, I know it.
I mean, you know, again, Maryland is lucky. I mean, we have so many fishing opportunities, you know, on the coast and then in the
bay
itself and all the freshwater. And you know, the state, you know, some people will say, oh, you know, the state doesn't want us catching fish. The state, you know, they're trying to take fish away from us. And it's like, that frustrates me because it couldn't be any further from the truth.
Exactly. You know, yeah, I mean, you guys, you know, look, with the limited staff that you guys have, your staff has been cut over the past maybe 10 years. You guys have gone from a high of 210, 12 people. I think you're about 155, 160 now, something like that.
Yep.
I mean, you know, what you guys do with a limited amount of people, with the vast fishing opportunities that we have here in Maryland. You got the commercial group, you got the charter boat group, you got the recreational anglers, you got salt, fresh, tidal, coastal. I mean, you know, not enough people, but.
Yeah. Well,
but it is what it is. I mean, the budget is what it is, and you guys do a phenomenal job as far as managing the fisheries. In my own personal opinion, the boots-on-the-ground biologists are none finer in the country. And, you know, knowing people in the department at the top, in the middle, and at the bottom, I mean, I just have nothing but respect for the entire fisheries service in Maryland. So I just
thought I'd say that. They deserve it, especially
they do.
The folks that are out in the field right now as we're speaking.
Yeah, out in the cold rain, you know, 40 degrees out there, sampling fish. Exactly right.
So. Now, another, you know, you mentioned all the people that have left, and it's neat because I know people like Rudy and Dale and Harley Spears.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Carter, they, you know, they're the old timers. They've retired, but I think they all keep their hands in it, which is really good because there was so much institutional knowledge, so much history that those guys. Oh yeah, we did this in 19. You know,
oh yeah,
this
sure.
Is what we were doing.
Yeah, deja vu all over again.
They helped the department. They're still involved with. You know, I know. You know, our biologists. You know, call, contact them, see them. You
sure.
know, Dale calls into your show. All
oh
the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that's a good thing. I mean, that's wonderful to still be able to get. You know, to get that input from people that know, you know, that they remember what happened when this regulation was made. And again, that, you know, the whole point was, well, you know, the regulation wasn't made to hurt anybody's feelings or take anything away. It's usually a matter of compromise and balance.
And again, Maryland, in my opinion, has always erred on the size management has always erred on the size of being conservative in the harvesting the resources, and you know it's just where it is. And I salute you guys.
Well, thank you, appreciate it.
So one more little topic here. We're quickly running out of time. What type of survey do you guys do? You mentioned Dale mentioned the creel survey, but you know, tell me a little bit about what tools you need from the anglers to help manage the fishery.
Well, we have, I mentioned, you know, the spawning stock survey that's done on the spawning grounds, you know, that's going on, like I said, as we speak, you know, the creel survey, which goes on during the, you know, the department has actually a couple different creel surveys, that go on during, you know, we have one creel survey that goes on throughout the whole course of the year. That's the one where, you know, people, you know, they're asking questions about all different species.
Sure.
We have another separate one that targets striped bass. It's looking at effort and catch for like the charter boats and private anglers. You know, you've got the striped bass juvenile survey. You know, we have volunteer angler surveys that, you know, there's where we get that information from, you know, online from anglers that, you know, we don't have enough people to collect that information. And if you go to our website, you know, you can see there's, you know, a number of different species where, you know, we rely on information from the anglers.
Sure.
We also try to encourage, you know, the charter boat captains. You know, we have you know, survey forms for them to fill out, you know, catch and release forms, you know, information that we just can't get any other way. And it just, you know, it just is really beneficial when when those folks participate. We have, you know, we have a, you know, we haven't mentioned commercial fishing. We have a number of commercial, you know, pound net, gill net, you know, the check stations that we are, you know, we're sampling commercial harvest, and we get sure. We get a lot of information, and all this information together, I mean, it gives Maryland a strong case for when we, like, go to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, we go there and say, hey, you know, we need to do this, we want to do that, and we have the, you know, we have the biological information to back it up.
Right.
You know, what we're doing is, mm-hmm. you know, we know what we're doing. We help other states, you know, we help Potomac River Fisheries.
Right.
Virginia, you know, it's, you know, our information can help them because it's, you know, these fish really don't stop at the Virginia state line.
They don't know where the lines are, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it's we've got a lot of things going on. We try to monitor, you know, all aspects of all fisheries. And then we've got, you know, different crews. You know, we have a cruise where we, you know, send biologists out in the middle of wintertime.
Right.
You know, January, February. We call it the North Carolina cruise, but it's really not a cruise. they're usually bundled up in most years. But they're out either on charter boats or on research vessels. And, again, trying to sample, you know, striped bass, you know, in their migratory pattern. They're out on the coast in the wintertime.
Excellent.
And all these people, you know, you mentioned them, all these people that are you know, getting their hands wet, you know, getting their feet wet, getting cold, and they're, you know, they're writing down the data and giving us the information resource that we need to, you know, to properly manage striped bass in Maryland.
Excellent. Harry, three questions came in. We put the callers aside because of our, you know, our conversation. When's the best time to go flounder fishing? Now.
Well, out of Ocean City.
Will the snakeheads affect the striped bass spawn?
No, the snakeheads will not affect them.
What do you do with the white perch that you catch in the survey?
In our survey?
Yep.
We put them back over. We put all fish back over.
That answers the reader or the listener's questions. Okay. So the short answer on the snakeheads, no.
No.
So, all right. Well, listen, Harry, it's been a pleasure. Always enjoyable having you on the show. We appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be talking to you at a future date. And if you get out there, hope to catch a nice fish over 35 inches. And we look forward to talking to you again.